Chapter 7. When Merlin wakes the next morning, he finds himself pressed up against Arthur, his back to Arthur's chest. He was still sitting when he fell asleep, but he's lying down now, cocooned by Arthur's body. Everything looks different in the morning light, and yet Merlin doesn't feel any less at home in Arthur's arms. He shifts slightly, not wanting Arthur to wake up and let him go quite yet, but unfortunately the movement jars his injuries. He hisses in pain, and Arthur stirs behind him.
"Merlin,"
he mumbles sleepily, and it sounds so strangely affectionate, like it's completely natural for them to wake up entangled in each other's arms. He can't pinpoint the exact moment Arthur wakes up properly, because he instantly shifts away from Merlin.
"Sorry,"
he says guiltily, and Merlin wants to tell him it's okay, but he's suddenly in too much pain to even speak. He gasps a little, the throb in his fingers and side building unbearably, and Arthur seems to understand. He gets up quickly and fetches the pill bottle from the side and the water from the nightstand.
"Here,"
he says, and Merlin tries to sit up, but it's too difficult, and he feels frustrated tears pricking at his eyes as Arthur climbs back onto the bed.
"I know,"
Arthur says softly, giving his good hand a little pat.
"It's okay."
His voice is still thick with sleep, but Merlin hears the concern in it, so he doesn't complain about being treated like a child. He lets Arthur maneuver him to sit up against the bed frame and accepts the pills with a shaking hand. He feels psychologically better once he's taken them, even though he knows they won't kick in for a good half hour. Arthur goes to make tea, and Merlin rests his head against the headboard and tries to breathe through the agony. He's mildly distracted from the hurt when Arthur returns and bullies him into eating two slices of toast. Merlin protests that he'll be sick, but he has to admit he feels a little better once he's got them down. He's trying very hard not to think about the events of the day before, because he doesn't think he's ready to go there yet. But when Arthur leans up to reach something from the cupboard and his shirt rides up, a memory of last night flashes up in his head.
"How did you get that scar?"
Arthur freezes.
"What scar?"
he asks slowly.
"When you were changing last night, I saw..."
Merlin trails off, gesturing to Arthur's stomach. Arthur's face smooths out into blankness.
"Old football injury,"
he says.
"Do you want some more tea? I made a
Arthur," Merlin says. "It's a magic scar, and a kill scar, if I'm not mistaken."
Arthur starts tidying up the medicines and plasters left out on the dresser.
"So what if it is?"
he says flatly.
"Not any of your business."
From this angle, Merlin can see the faint bites he left on Arthur's neck. There's still a swelling in Arthur's lip from where Merlin sunk his teeth in 2 nights ago. He's made Arthur his business, and it's too late to back out now.
"Fair enough, but I have to say I'm a little surprised. All those discussions we had on the morality of magic, and you never once threw that in my face."
"It wasn't,"
Arthur says, and stops. He fiddles with a roll of bandages for a while, and Merlin waits, sensing he shouldn't push right now.
"It wasn't the kind of thing you throw in someone's face,"
Arthur says finally.
"Oh no, I didn't mean it like that," Merlin says guiltily. "I wasn't trying to trivialize..."
"I know,"
Arthur cuts him off.
"I meant, it wasn't his fault, the man who did it."
"What happened?" Merlin asks.
Arthur looks troubled.
"Do you remember those, illegal magic fights they used to have? In warehouses and stuff?"
Merlin remembers them all too well,
He stayed up late one night when he was 10 to watch a documentary on them, attracted by the temptingly gory advert. It was a mistake. He'd watched in horror as secret cameras captured footage of men being beaten, brutalized, ripped to shreds in front of baying crowds. His mom came down to find him crying on the sofa, convinced that he'd be forced to fight too one day. She reassured him as best she could, but he couldn't help but notice the tears in her own eyes. Not long before he'd arrived at the Institute, they had spearheaded a nationwide campaign with the police to crack down on underground fighting rings. The fights were all but gone now, a relic of a grislier time. But they lingered on in the collective consciousness of the magical community. Some things could not be forgotten. Arthur seems to be waiting for some sign of acknowledgement, so Merlin nods.
My dad took me to one when I was 15. And I left early because I didn't like it. One of the magicals tried to use me as leverage to escape. He aimed a spell at my father, but I stepped in front of it, and then...
He runs one hand almost unconsciously over his stomach. Was it a kill spell?
Yeah. It was like a 1 in 100 chance of me surviving it, but I did.
Arthur motions unhappily, almost like he can't understand why he was spared. You said it wasn't the man's fault? Merlin says, and it's halfway to a question.
He was half crazy with whatever drugs they pumped him full of,
Arthur says, and his tone is sad.
I don't think he even knew what he was doing.
It's a more compassionate response than Merlin would have expected, but he's gotten used to Arthur being full of surprises by now. And then the full weight of what he's just heard hits him. Arthur nearly died when he was 15. He went through something most people never will. It must have had a profound effect on who he became. It's another piece of the Arthur puzzle, but Merlin's beginning to think he'll never fit it all together now. He only knows what he knows. Which is that he cares about Arthur, and that his hatred for Uther grows with every passing moment.
So your father took you to an illegal magic fight at 15?
He says, not bothering to hide the disgust in his voice. Unexpectedly, Arthur gives him a rather wry smile.
He was sorry. I know what you think of him, but he was. When I was in hospital, he never left my side. I think it must have brought back memories of when my mom died.
Arthur's never mentioned his mother before, not even once. Merlin hadn't pried, guessing how painful the subject must be. But Arthur's brought it up now, so he says... I'm sorry about your mom. Arthur shrugs, but there's nothing casual about it. It's the kind of accustomed wariness that comes from hearing meaningless apologies all your life. Merlin knows a thing or two about that.
You can tell me about it, if you like, he says quietly.
Arthur looks like he's considering it. There's a little furrow in his brow that Merlin wants to smooth out with his fingers.
It was a blood clot, he says at last. The hospital had just joined the Medical Magic Trust, and they offered her a spelled epidural. My dad wanted her to get a regular one, but she thought this way was less risky. The midwife performed the spell, and...
Arthur stops, face contorting in grief, and Merlin's heart breaks a little. He looks so worn down, like he's bone-weary, like he's been that way for a long time.
She got to hold me, for at least a few minutes, before she...
He blinks rapidly a few times, and Merlin has to fight not to reach out to him, to take him in his arms. Arthur's voice is ragged when he finally continues.
Uther sued the hospital after, and they settled out of court. He got the midwife fired, too.
Of course he did. Merlin isn't sure if he should say what he's about to say, but he thinks it needs to be said. Enough people have lied to Arthur in his life. He deserves the truth now.
Arthur, Merlin begins gently. You know that magical epidurals can't cause a blood clot, right? They've been tested and tested. They're almost completely risk-free.
I know, Arthur says tiredly, I looked it up when I was 16. After the warehouse, I started to question some of the things my dad said. So I read all the studies on the internet. I know it wasn't anyone's fault. She would have died anyway. His fingers absently trace across the ring on his fingers. But my dad was influential, and I think the hospital just wanted to make it go away. So they let the midwife take the blame.
No matter how many stories like this Merlin hears, they always cut him deep. So many magicals have been forced to pay for the mistakes of others. It burns him up inside.
I wrote her name down, Arthur says suddenly. The midwife. Nimue Lachlan. She wasn't allowed to practice again. My dad made sure of that. But I want to make it right. I don't know how. Maybe when my dad's retired, or I can clear her name.
He looks fiercely determined, and Merlin feels a strange rush of something approaching pride. He thinks of his own father and how he longs to tell the world who Balinor Emrys really was and how he died. But Arthur doesn't even know this Nimue. He's only doing it because he thinks it's right. It's not the first time Merlin's seen flashes of the man Arthur truly is away from the influence of his father and the indoctrination he grew up with. Merlin wants to draw that man out, bring him to the light. There's so much potential for Arthur to be something more.
That sounds like a good thing to do, he says softly.
Arthur smiles then, a little nervous, a little hopeful.
Merlin wants to say something. Something about the way they woke up slotted together, like two halves of a whole. But the moment passes. And he seems to have used up all his energy on the conversation, because he drifts off not 5 minutes later and sleeps for most of the day. Arthur wakes him up for lunch, and then for dinner, although Merlin's so tired he can only get through two-thirds of each before his eyes slip shut again. He sleeps all through the night and wakes at noon the next day to find Arthur gone and a note on the bed promising he'll be back soon. He's left Merlin's pills within reaching distance, but the wait for them to kick in is as agonizing as usual. He's grateful when Arthur returns from town to divert his attention.
"Any news?" he asks on autopilot. And then he realizes that, yes, there probably is news, and he's probably a significant part of it.
"I didn't look for long," Arthur says briefly, and he's quite obviously avoiding Merlin's eyes.
"Did the video get released?" Merlin asks, already knowing the answer.
"Yeah,"
Arthur says, concentrating hard on unlacing his shoes.
"I suppose all the news channels played it," Merlin says, letting an edge creep into his voice.
"I think some, not all, and only after Watershed, because..."
"Because it was graphic, yes," Merlin bites out. He's hiding behind anger to counter the nausea rising in his stomach. Everyone's going to see that video of him, whimpering and bloody on the floor, broken and pathetic. Any kid with an internet connection will be able to view one of the worst moments of his life.
"I'm sorry." "Don't!" Merlin says, holding his hand up.
"No more apologies.
You can't do anything about the fact that it's out there now, and the world and his wife can have a good laugh at the little magical begging for mercy from..."
"No, Merlin,"
Arthur cuts in, sounding horrified.
"I swear, it's not like that. People are disgusted. Not at you, at what they did to you. There's been a public outrage."
"An outrage?" Merlin doesn't believe it. Magicals may have come a long way in the last decade, but no one really cares about them. They're tolerated at best. No one would go to the bat to fight for their rights.
"People from all over the UK have been sending messages of support, and from outside the UK too. Non-magicals as well as magicals. They're organizing a big march in Whitehall this week in protest. Even some of the Integrity Party have come forward and said they've decided to back the microchipping bill."
Merlin frowns, not quite able to take it in.
"People really care?" he asks uncertainly.
"Yes," Arthur says emphatically. "My father's plan completely backfired. He thought he could intimidate the Institute, but all he did was spark a massive groundswell of support for you. Support for the whole cause."
He pauses. I think sometimes people are anti-magical because they don't know any better. They never have to think hard about it. And then, this kidnapping, this video, I think more people saw how wrong it was, like a wake-up call or something.
Merlin senses that Arthur isn't only talking about other people here, but himself as well. He wonders if it could all be so easy, if people's minds could change just like that. Edwin always said that every political movement has its time, that sometimes people need a catalyst to start doing what they should have done all along. If he's been a catalyst, perhaps it's worth that video being out there, no matter how painful it is for him. He feels some of the anger seeping away, and his voice is calmer when he speaks again.
Did the Institute make any statement about it?
No, but Mordred Barrett went on Newsnight to express his outrage.
Merlin notices Arthur's frowning slightly. What's that look for?
Just... he could have kept his mouth shut in the first place.
Arthur says irritably,
I'm not saying it's his fault, but he could have picked a better time to make such an inflammatory speech.
Merlin stares at him. Don't be ridiculous. You can't blame this on him. Merlin had been strangely happy when Arthur told him about Mordred's speech, even for all the trouble it caused. Mordred was so careful all the time, always trying to be moderate, never wanting to alienate potential voters. Merlin didn't want to see him go the way of Julius and lose the passion that led him to politics in the first place. It was nice to hear he had a bit of fire in his belly after all.
I'm not blaming it on him. I'm only saying...
I'm glad he made that speech. He's never been one to back down to bullies, Merlin says stoutly.
It's not about backing down. He should have thought about the consequences. You'd think he would want to look out for you, considering...
Merlin gives Arthur a very pointed look.
Considering what?
Arthur gestures uncomfortably.
Considering the two of you... you know.
I am not with Mordred.
But you did kiss him.
Arthur, are you jealous? Merlin asks, suddenly amused.
Is that what this is all about?
No, why would I be jealous?
Arthur retorts defensively. Merlin's in far too much pain to be coy.
Because we nearly fucked the other day until you ran scared, and I don't think you even know what you want.
There's a silence that can only be described as excruciating, but Merlin's past caring, to be honest. They've been through too much to dance around each other now, to pretend. If Arthur won't face up to it, then Merlin will damn well make him.
The other night, Arthur says with great difficulty, was a mistake.
Bullshit, Merlin says immediately. It was fucked up, I'll grant you that, but it was not a mistake. We both wanted it. The mistake was when you ran.
Arthur runs his hand through his hair, and it's trembling slightly.
I can't have this conversation with you.
Don't be such a coward, Merlin says, but his tone isn't harsh.
He wants Arthur to stop blocking him, to open up and let him in. He's scared too. He doesn't understand what's happening between them any better than Arthur does, but he can't figure it out on his own.
Does this happen to you a lot? He continues insistently. Because it doesn't happen to me. I never feel like this. And that tells me that it's something more than just...
Merlin, please,
Arthur says miserably.
No, please, nothing. Does it happen to you? Does it? Say the word and I'll back off. Tell me it means nothing. Tell me I mean nothing to you. Tell me. Tell me and I'll never mention it again.
Arthur turns away. Long seconds tick by.
I can't tell you that,
he says at last, and his voice is low, strained.
But I can't be with you either.
Then he walks out of the room. Merlin slumps back down on the bed. He wants to punch a wall, go for a walk, anything to relieve some of the tension thrumming through him. But he can't. All he can do is lie there and play Arthur's words over and over in his head. In your voice is a weapon. We'll deal with it, what we got in my voice.
Listen, why can't